Right, this week is Parshas Vayechi, and since most Vayechi classes always have a heavy emphasis on the beginning of the Parsha, and Yaakov, and Yosef, and Ephraim and Manasseh, so I'm not going to emphasize that in a significant way. As you see, there's a little bit on it on the sheet with the Nitziv's comments. Mostly we're going to look towards the end of the Parsha, post the brachos of Yaakov, and specifically related to Yaakov's dying, Yaakov meaning the process leading up to his dying, and the aftermath of his death. Sai on the one hand, the burial, and the brothers talking to Yosef after the fact, after they've returned to Egypt. Okay, so let's begin. The Parsha begins on page 268 in the Arutz Chumash, where we're told, after it tells us that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim for 17 years, Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamus, Vayikra Livno Yosef, Yisrael is going to be dying, and he calls Yosef and he says, he says, do a kindness for me, and do not bury me in Egypt. So the first thing which should stand out is that the pasuk says Vayechi Yaakov lives in Mitzrayim for 17 years, and then Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamus, and Yisrael is getting close to dying. So the Nitziv jumps on that and he says, you know, when it mentions that it's Yisrael's days who are numbered, it doesn't say Yaakov. We look at the top page one. Looks of Yaakov, Asher lo hirgish choli v'chalishus shevim nachmazek yikirvu yamav. Right, Yaakov didn't feel the illness. What does that mean? I mean, it's the same man. So what are we talking about? So skip to the very last line in the middle of the line. El machmashu Yisrael hayelo ha'ara ruchanis shekarvu yamav. So it looks like what the Nitziv is saying is that Yisrael is more of a spiritual name. Okay, this is a game that I play every year when I get to this parsha, trying to figure out what does Yaakov mean, what does Yisrael mean, is it used, and it's hard to find a consistency with all this stuff. I mean, you can knach it, and that's obviously what he's doing here, but it doesn't. You know, I'm still looking for the perfect explanation. So I don't know what we have, but that's the vort that he follows with, that Yisrael is a ruchnius name, and when Yisrael appears, it's in the realm of ruchnius, and therefore that's the route to follow. And we're going to see this. I mean, you could just take a look at his comment on Pasuk Ches, for example, by Yar Yisrael, right? When he sees Ephraim and Manasseh, what does it say? Atayichin etzmol v'arech beruach hakodesh al kein ksiv Yisrael. So he says again that we all call him Yaakov. When Yaakov is getting to the point to give the bracha, so he's going to do it with the ruach hakodesh. So that's more of a ruchnius kind of thing. So therefore. Therefore, the name Yisrael. So, listen, what you can do is you can go through it and you can see if it actually fits in consistently throughout. And if it does, fantastic, great. It's a perfect it's a perfect explanation. I don't know that it actually works consistently. And but if you can connect it the way that the Nitziv does, then there you go. Okay, so in Pasuk Hey, on page 270, so Yaakov, I'm going to call him Yaakov for ease sake, although he's actually speaking as Yaakov at this point in time, Yomer Yaakov Yosef and Pasuk Gimel. So in Pasuk Hey, he says, Atash Nevenech Analadim Lecha Beretz Yisrael Ad Elech Mitzrayim Elihem, Ephraim and Manasseh Kerubim Neshimon Yuli. So he tells Yosef that your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, are going to be like Reuben and Shimon. Are Ephraim and Manasseh present at this time? Yeah, they are. But are they in Yaakov's presence at this time? The answer is not yet. Okay? But what do we find? What do we find? That how did he refer to them? He referred to them as... who's the older one? We all know, right? Who's the older one? Menashe is the older one. Okay? We saw that in last week's... in Parshas Miketz, we saw that. So if Menashe is the older one, but how are they listed here in what Yaakov is already telling Yosef? He says Ephraim and Manasseh are going to be like Reuben and Shimon. He doesn't say your son. He doesn't say the generic your sons, and he doesn't say Manasseh and Ephraim. So what is he already telling us? This is the line: Yaakov Yadav Mikvar Beruach Hakodesh Od B'Shas Bracha Sheivarchem Achakach Yakdim Ephraim and Manasseh. And it's him saying Yaakov already had planned. It's not like Yosef brings him and Yaakov's like, oh, okay, I'm lost, confused. I mean, Yaakov knew exactly what he was doing. That is the point that the Nitziv makes. And the rest of this, he says, Yosef lo hevin. Yosef there was something lost in the translation to Yosef. Now, to be honest, I don't understand exactly what the rest of this comment of the Netziv is, but what I take from it is that Yosef was thinking too much. And because he was thinking too much, he missed the hints that Yaakov was dropping to him. And we're going to see in a second why Yaakov felt it was important to go this route in terms of putting Ephraim first. Okay. Now, one thought: just if you turn the page in the Chumash, you're going to see that Yaakov says to Yosef, and it's a good reminder that when he says Hamalach Hagoel, it's a bracha to Yosef, right? It's in Pasuk Tesvav. The Rachumashim on the shelf, if you need. Okay, Vayivarech, or Vayivarech is Yosef Vayomar, in Pasuk Dazvav. He blessed Yosef and he said to him, Ha Elohim, Asher Salchu Avosai Lefanav, Avraham V'Yitzchak, Ha Elohim Arosimi Odi Arayom Azeh, God before whom my fathers went, Avraham Yitzchak, God who shepherded me, from then until now, Hamalach Hagol Osimi Kol Roi Yivarech Esan Arim Yikarei Behem Shemi V'Shem V'Vatsayav Rum Yitzchak V'Yigul Ro B'Kerev Haaretz. So the bracha of Hamalach Hagol is not a bracha to Ephraim and Menashe, it's a bracha to Yosef. That's just an aside. But look at what the Nitziv says. Yivarech Esan Arim Hayivarech Koi Gam Al Ha'Elohim. Okay, what is Yaakov saying? He's saying that Hamalach Hagol Osi, right, the angel who redeems me, should bless me. The angel who should bless me. So we saw a couple years ago, I think it was in the Aksava Kabbalah, he said that Hamalach HaGoel, he came up with a fascinating explanation. He says that the Malach comes from the word Melacha. What does Melacha mean? Work, the one who does. So he said that Malach was a kinui, it was like a nickname for God, which was, fascinating. But the point is that the brach, what Yaakov's asking for, bracha from a Malach, you want a bracha from God. So he says, the Netziv says, Elohim. Okay, in other words, who's the one who does the blessing? It's God who does the blessing. And if you play around with the modifiers in the way that you need to, that's the point that he makes. Take a look at the next comment of the Netziv. And I really only included this because it follows up on a theme that we've seen a number of times up until now. Look at what he says. Higdim Shemo L'Shem Avosav. Right, Yaakov talks about himself before he talks about his fathers. The perush v'yikarei b'hem shemi, whom Hashem omer b'tfila Elohei Avraham, Elohei Yitzchak, Elohei Yaakov, calling my name, that means, that's a reference to the way that we daven, right? That's the beginning of Shemon Esrei. Elohei Avraham, Elohei Yitzchak, Elohei Yaakov. V'yivu'ar b'parsha shmos, shehu al shem hashgach al Yisrael b'shlosh enyanim. Now what do these three fathers represent? We've seen these before, okay? So I put them in bold. Milchama v'hagana, who's that, everybody? Those who are here, you should know it's Avraham. Parnasa, we've emphasized that one heavily. That's Yitzchak. And Umidas HaShalom, the idea of peace, that's Yaakov. Okay, Shabo Neged Torah, Avoda, Ugunas Chasadim, that those three arenas, they're meant to parallel the three pillars upon which the world stands. V'hispalel Yaakov, I'm lying under the bowl in the middle, V'hispalel Yaakov, Shugabahem Shalosh Midos Halalu, what Yaakov was praying was that these three Midos of Milchama Vagana, Parnasa, Midas HaShalom, should come through in these children as well. Uzei Yikarei Bahem Shem Avos, and that's how the names of the Avos come through them. Ikvar Yadua Dezer Yosef Hayum Yuchadim B'Midas HaShalom U'Gemilas Chasadim. He says, Yosef's children, they were unique, I guess, in the character of Shalom and Gemilas Chasadim. So what's Shalom and Gemilas Chasadim? It sounds like that's Yaakov. Yoter Mibederach Torah Avoda. Okay? So, we don't... So what is that? Gemilas Chasadim... I'm sorry, Gemilas Chasadim is the parallel, right? Gemilas Chasadim is the third pillar, which parallels Shalom, so that's Yaakov. And Torah and Avoda parallel Haganah and Parnasa, and those, they were not... Yaakov's children, Yosef's children, rather, were not as strong in those. Who were stronger in those? Shai Karam, Yehuda V'Levi. Okay? Yehuda and Levi were stronger in those two. Well, Haganah and Avoda. I mean, no, Haganah and Parnasa, Torah/Torah of Avoda. Okay, now, what is he referring to? I mean, he says, I've talked about this Le'el, Memvav Dalet, so I don't think that we looked at that last week, but go to the script of the end line. So he says, maybe they weren't as great as the other ones, but they had it as well. they had it as well. So what's the point? The point is that Yaakov is giving blessings to his to Yosef's children, that they should fit in with the other brothers. That's the main thing. And as we're soon going to see, the significance of their being present as part of Am Yisrael is important because, as we all know, the first kingdom to be destroyed and therefore lost is Malchus Yisrael. And who was in Malchus Yisrael?
Ten tribes.
Well, among them, Menashe and Ephraim. Okay, so what happens to Yosef? That's it. What's left? Yehuda and Yamin and Shimon, which was in the tribe Yehuda, and Levi. So that's just important to remember, that whatever bracha is given over to Ephraim and Menashe is something which is meant to be transferred not just to Ephraim and Menashe alone, but they are serving as representatives. Right? What does Yaakov say? They're like Reuven and Shimon to me, which means they are now the oldest of my tribes. So they are part of Klal Yisrael. So whatever I give to them, I'm giving to everybody, but they're just, you know, in the firstborn role. That's what it is. It's Yosef doubled, but otherwise it's part of all my children, which is Am Yisrael.
And that's why we need them
brachos. Right. And that is a reason for why we give the brachos to the, you know, the brachos that we give to our children is Yisimcha Elohim Kefraim V'chem Menashe. Okay, I'm going to skip the next couple things. This is just a little too much, which we don't really need to go through. So turn the page in the, or rather, I should say, turn the page. Okay, turn the page. So, if you recall, what happens in this story is that Yaakov then calls the boys over, and he gives he hasn't blessed them yet, okay? The blessing takes place on the bottom page, on the bottom line, on page 272, but he has put his hands on them. If you follow the order of, in other words, if you're following the order of the text and saying this is the order of what's taking place over here, so we've seen. In the past, in previous years, some of the Mefarshim take that notion to task. In other words, they think that there is a viewpoint that the order of the text is not exactly the order of what's going on. There's a lot going on all at once, and the Torah just presents it the way that it has to, in a straight narrative. But insofar as things going, and there are hints to this, for example, Vayar Yosef Pasuk Yitzayin, the first Pasuk of Shlishi, Vayar Yosef Ki Yashis Aviv Yad Yimino Al Rosh Ephraim Vayir Abayinav Vayismoch Yad Aviv Lasir Osam Al Rosh Ephraim Al Rosh Menashe. Yosef sees, or Vayar actually would mean Yosef saw, which means that it already happened, and therefore Yosef is commenting afterwards. Okay, now there is no way that Yosef missed it. Okay, it is too awkward of a move.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean it's insane. Okay, I used to perform this for children, and I would get the kids, come on guys, come on. And it's impossible. I mean, there's no way that Yosef missed it. So the idea that this is all taking place while he's doing this and Yosef missed it's not possible. But so Yosef saw it, and he tries to get his father to switch. I knew. Okay, gamhu yelaam, gamhu yigdal. He too will be a nation, and he too will grow. Ve'ulam achiva katon yigdal mimenu. So the first part seems to be referring to Menashe, because that's what Yosef said. Zeh b'chor simni menchal rosho. This is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. But Yosef, I'm sorry, Yaakov again knows exactly what he's doing. He says he will be a nation, but his younger brother is going to be greater than him. Vizaro yiyeh meloh hagoyim, and his children will fill the nations. Okay, what does that mean? Take a look at the way the Nitziv puts it. V'ulam achiva katon yigdal mimenu. He says eino bracha. That's not a bracha. It's not a bracha. It's an observation. The bracha comes afterwards. Look at the last line in the Chumash. You see, by Yerachim, by Yomu Lemor, he blessed them, saying, "B'chay Yerach Yisrael Lemor, Yisimcha Elun Gefraim Menashe." The bracha of Ephraim Menashe is that Bnei Yisrael are going to bless their children with your names. That's the bracha of Ephraim Menashe. Amal Chagoa was a bracha to Yosef. So he says, "Ain't a bracha." We're in the tziv top of page 2. Di hu bracha halo lo Yishev Yaakov Amai Ma'alim Koach Ephraim Yoter Mikoach Menashe. Right, then if it's a bracha, Yaakov's not really explaining why Ephraim is going to be greater than Menashe. Elisha yodeh bracha kodesh ki ra'ui Hu l'chavod Yisera b'asher yeh mechubad. What Yaakov is saying is, I know something about Ephraim that he is deserving of a higher level of honor. V'gam alkein nitzrach lebracha zo aydei yamin shi b'shefa Yisera. I mean, the part that I skipped in the Nisiv that I gave you, but I just didn't read inside, is he focuses on the significance of the right hand. Dimishu God of Alichas Solomon, Nitzrach l'Shefa Yisera. He needs this extra flow, this extra grace, which comes from the right hand. Okay, but what is Vezaroyim Elo Agoyim? Is Yaakov talking about the future? Right. I mean, Rashi says that who comes from Ephraim? Yehoshua. And who comes from Manasseh? I don't remember. Does he say? Does he mention Yeravam Ben Nevat? I don't remember. I mean, does he mention it? Us and Yehoshua.
Gidon.
He doesn't. Rashi does not mention it. Oh no, Gidon. Yeah, he does mention Gidon. Okay, so he does mention Gidon. Okay, but the Netziv is going to kind of take that to task. He says, "Im kayal Yeshua Gemashmo Zera Ephraim Lo Yeroy Lomar Vizaro." If you're talking about Yehoshua, then you're not talking about his children. Shari kolam amar gam hu yelaam kari al zera Menashe. Right, the idea that he's going to become a nation is referring to Menashe. V'chein apirish echav katon yigdal mimenu. So Menashe is going to become a nation, and Ephraim is going to become a nation. But even though Menashe is going to become a nation, Ephraim achiv katon yigdal mimenu. Are we talking about the future, or are we talking about Ephraim? Hainu Zaro, we're talking about his children. So he's going to be a nation, but he's going to yigdal. This is very confusing. That he's going to be greater than him. In other words, he switched around the order. If you look at the way Yaakov says it, he says, Gamhu yela'am v'gamhu yigdal. And then regarding the younger brother, yigdal mimenu, Vizaro yemelo agoyim. In other words, usually we try to speak in parallel. So if he's going to say regarding Menashe, hu yela'am v'gam hu yigdal, it should say that regarding Ephraim, that zaro yemelo agoyim and hu yigdal imenu. That's the way it should be. But he switches things around. Elokach. So now I'm in the fourth line in the middle. Elokach ha'inyan. Degidon abam Menashe lo yagado b'toro ki yidu shechashivu b'gemara. That what do the rabbis say about Gidon? That he wasn't such big shakes at the outset. Ach, skip to the end of that line. Ach b'asher yelam v'kibet al yado shlosh meyas ish im Hashem amalakim v'ruim l'neis am Hashem amalakim v'ruim l'neis. But when Gidon came down to it, and Gidon was put to the task, achar kach niskadel Gidon al yadam. Gidon grew into the role which he ultimately played. And so then, the success in the battlefield was given in his name. Right? Gidon was not considered to be a scholar, a teacher. He, you know, kind of had to learn on the job. No, that's Barak. Gidon is a shofet, but he is the shofet before... Actually, no, after Deborah. Should be after Deborah. Barak, we know. Okay, so what is Yehoshua? Avi Torah Shebal Peh Bezmano. Yehoshua is the first transmitter of Torah Shebal Peh. Moshe Kibbal Torah Misinai Musara. Yehoshua. Umela Yagad Al Kal Yisrael. V'nidrash HaShefa Yisera L'chal Kel Kal Yisrael B'vo Eis HaNagas HaDor Al Yado. When you look at these leaders, it's not a knock to Gidon to say that he was just stam a guy who rose to greatness. Kol Kavod. But Yehoshua was not just stam a guy. Yehoshua was somebody special even before he became a leader. Gidon rose to the occasion when leadership came upon him. And so that's a significant difference that he's focusing on in terms of looking at that difference. I don't get the, you know, why it switched around, but maybe it's because his view of Yehoshua serving in that role is Yigdal Mimenu. He's going to be greater, and that's why it's mentioned first, because his greatness is going to come even before he attains any leadership position. Yeah.
This occurs at the time of when Yaakov.
Ephraim and Menashe are probably in their 20s. They are in their 20s.
Well, Yosef became the
What's the point of your question?
Well, you know.
Okay, one last thing, and this is really a modern message. When he says regarding Ephraim that Yem Lo Agoyim, take a look at the Nitziv says Hainu Kol Agoyim, that they're going to fill the nations. Hainu Kol HaOlam, rather, that they're going to fill the world. The Ikar Pilpula Shel Torah, the Emek Halacha Nisrachek Be'ez Shehalchu Yisrael Bagalah. He says, how does Torah spread? How did Torah spread to the world in whatever manner that it spread to the world? When Am Yisrael was, I mean, unfortunately, but when they were in Galus. Skip to the end of that second line. V'chol Ba'alei HaTalmud Talmidim Shel Yehoshua Hema. He says, those who are the teachers of Talmud, they're students of Yoshua. What does that mean? Because Yoshua is that line in Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, Musar Li Yoshua. Mishmachi Regil Lamar, Elo Amar Yoshua Ben Nun Befume. This is something that Yoshua would have taught. V'diktek Yaakov Avinu Lamar Vizaro. So it says regarding Ephraim Vizaro that his children Lo Hu Shehem Bnei Ephraim. It's not referring to Yoshua specifically. By the way, guess how many children Yoshua had? Zero. He's not okay. Maybe no sons. I don't know, but if he had definitely no sons. Tibemez lo nishar koach anifla shel Yeshua Rosh Ephraim biad banav u'shivto el bidei shevet Levi Yehuda. Okay, and that's what I mentioned before, that the idea of the transmission of Torah didn't last in Ephraim, but still Yeshua is given the credit. Yeshua is given the credit because it started with him, meaning following Moshe. But it went on to those who were the transmitters in the exile. I mean, not just in the exile, but particularly in the exile, namely Levi and Yehuda. Okay, so that was the introduction. Okay, and now we're going to move on to what I wanted to talk about, which is issues surrounding the death of Yaakov, the dying moments of Yaakov, and his burial, and the aftermath. Okay, so if you have the Chumash, you'll have to turn to page 282, where after Yaakov gives the brachos to all of his sons, and the Shishi starts with one pasuk dedicated to the bracha to Binyamin, and then look in pasuk chavtes, it's the last line of the page. Yaakov instructs them, and he says, "I'm gathering to my nation," which basically means I'm dying. I want you to bury me with my fathers to the cave, which is in the field of Ephron. In the cave, which is in the field of Machpelah. Asher al pnei Mamre. And then he gives a few more details. That it's in where Mamre was, in the land of Canaan, that Avram bought the Sadeh from the field from Ephron Achiti for Achuzes cover. And then he gives a little more history, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Avram and Sarah are buried there, Yitzchak and Rivka were buried there, Leah is buried there, Mikneah Sadeh, V'yami Arash, Sherbo, Me'es Penechais, and just reminding you that it was purchased by Yechal, Yaakov, Litzavos, Espanov. Yaakov finished instructing his sons, which by the way might mean that he gave them more instructions, which the Torah does not record. Vayasof raglav elamitai, gathered his feet to the bed. Vayigva, vayyosef elamav, so he dies. Vayipol Yosef al panei aviv, vayyev alav vayishaklo. Yosef falls on his father's face, cries on him, and kisses him. Okay? So that last part is something which the Nitziv is going to talk about. Yosef kisses him after he's dead. The Nitziv thinks that that's a little bit weird. Okay, I mean, what's the point of kissing him after he's... I'm not saying people don't do it.
He avoided it for 17 years.
That is not pshat. That is not... I mean, you can read it that way, but that's not... You can't prove that. Okay? Pasuk Haftas, in the Netziv. Vayitzav osam vayomer alehem. Gam tziv avizhir osam. So this is Yaakov telling them. So Yaakov's giving them instructions about burial. El avosai el hamiara. Im avosai b'amiara mibay. The pasuk says, Yaakov says, el to my fathers, to the cave, but it should say im, with. V'haramban kasav shulashan katzar u'kamo u'sa'uni el avosai el hamiara, that there's a word missing. Now, I believe the Nitziv does not follow that kind of approach. He doesn't really focus on trying to fill in words that are missing. But he does say, "V'kasha azel lashon k'siv gam le'el chav gimel yitaz achkein kavar avram esara ishto el miaras." So if you're going to talk about, if you're going to say it should be im, then Sarah was buried el miaras to the cave, and regarding Avraham as well, it was said the same thing. If you have to look in Perek Chafei, v'sham yev shalafar eshachi, and you can't there say that it means im. Elamashma Usel, so he explains, what does this word El mean? To my fathers, to the cave. Hulashan Hashlama Latachlisa. The two means it's a completion of a tachlis, of a I'm gonna say a divine purpose. Disade Kvura Zu Lakach Notzra Misheshis Mebereshis. He says Me'aras HaMachpelah was created at the time of creation for this purpose, sheyua avos kvurimba, that the avos should be buried there. Nimtza kasher kavru echad mehemba hishlimu b'zeh tachlisa, that when the first one was buried, the tachlis, I mean hishlimu, they were completing its tachlis. Mishemachi shayach lashon el amira lihagia l'tachlisa. In other words, it has to come to the conclusion of its tachlis. Its tachlis was to be designated as a space. Okay, but that needs to come to its conclusion. B'chein lashon el avosayim esper shachis shebezet shenigbar Yaakov imam nigmar ratzon avosav b'shleimus sheyu shloshtem makom echad. Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. It's not right. Exactly. It's not complete until Yaakov's there.
He's buried there after Yaakov, right? Other nice men, right? That's it.
According to that midrash.
But I'm saying Yaakov's the last.
Correct. It gets sealed. Okay. Now, Asher b'steh machpelah. So I read all those psukim because I wanted you to see these. So you see that Yaakov uses the word machpelah a number of times, and the Netziv focuses on this. Shem machpelah nimtza b'torah b'shloshav ofanim. Yaakov says it a couple ways, but it appears in a few other. It appears at the end of the line. He quotes when Avram buys it. Stay Ephron Asher b'machpelah. Here it's b'machpelah alone. Asher b'machpelah. Later on in that line, he says Sedeh HaMachpelah. In the beginning of the third line, last line on the page, on page two, it's Miaras HaMachpelah. Mashmaus Machpelah Bechlal Shesham Kaflu Kedusha Sa'avos. That Machpelah, maybe that's like a homonym. What is Kaflu? Kaflu means to be folded, right?
Folded.
So that the holiness of the Avos is folded, but in other words, it has to. I, the way that I could think of it, just in terms of having an image or a metaphor, you know, in the olden days, and they talk about this in the Gemara, that somebody would be buried, kind of like the way Romeo and Juliet are buried, right? And then a year later, they'd come and they take the bones, and they'd concise it into a smaller box.
Yeah.
Okay. So, meaning once all the skin has been decomposed, so that idea is what Machpelah is. Okay, that their kedusha has to be folded up and kind of like put into this place. Shayu kamo pshutim b'chayim uchashemesu kaflum v'nigzum shama. Now pshutim could mean pashut, right? But I don't think that's what it means here. Another way to pashut means
spread out.
Okay, that their kedusha was spread far and wide, but when they died, it had to be folded and put and nignaz, right? It had to be put away there. Kemo sefer Torah calls man shekshero mishtam shemba he mufshetes. Right, when a Torah is kosher, spread out, you read it, right? But what happens when kisha nifsala koflin osavigonzin, and you just fold it up and you bury it? Kacha avos. Same thing with the avos. I'm on the top of page 3, second line, middle of the line. Calls man shayu chayim. How you come out sefer Torah shalom demeham mikol hiluch shalom mikol davar eze inyam rok yushasam. As long as they were alive, just like a Torah, you can learn everything from everything that they did. Vayisak kedusha shalom uvshetes b'olam, and their kedusha was widespread. But when they died, shmeisin nigdizum b'makom yuchad, they had to be placed into one spot. V'chol mishu muvshat b'yoter b'chayav yesh letzamtzem l'kapel yoter b'mozo. Can you imagine anybody whose influence is so incredible and so amazing? How do you gather it all together? It's really hard, but that's what needs to be done because that's what Geniza is. Mishum Achi, Avraham, fifth line. Shayaro Sheba Avos Adam Agadol Banakim. Avraham was the greatest of the giants, and it doesn't mean a literal giant, but it means just he was Anak. Ksivbe El Miaras HaMachpelah Nitzam Sem Kedusha Sob Amiratzma. So for Avraham's burial, it says El Miaras HaMachpelah too. It had to fold up his kedusha. It was just a huge task. Uvisara V'Yakov Ksiv Sedeh HaMachpelah. It says the field. He's referring to Sdea Machpelah, but they don't know what he's referring to. Everybody knew where, meaning Yaakov's family certainly knew where Avraham and Yitzchak were buried. Why is Yaakov so, being so precise and so careful, he wants to be buried here? Kedei lamdeinu ledoros habayim. Okay, this is where you start underlining. That's for you. Okay? Kedei lamdeinu ledoros habayim. Al ma ha-hekpeid cha-lios l'nachas ruach l'nefesh achar mosa. He says, what brings the best kind of rest to the soul? Amar gimel tamim. Yaakov is telling us there are three things. Three things that the soul needs. Number one, aleph. Ba-mi-ara asher b'sdei ha-machpelah. What does that mean? Being so specific. V'idua l'kol sgulas osamakim, to know how important, what's the significance of that, how do you translate segula? The treasure, of that place. Achar shehim yucheres l'ka, because this was designated and it's special for this kvura. U'mizeh l'manu me'ein zeh she'ez amakim she'esh b'segula ruchaniz tov yotel l'kvura. A place that has a spiritual significance is better for burial. And that, so it's a plug for Kavuras Eretz Yisrael. Okay, skip to Beis, two lines, towards the end of the line. Beis Asher Kanu Avraham, V'lamadnu Mizeh Asher Tov L'Hameis Lios Nigbar B'Makam Kanui V'lo B'Makam Shabab Matana. That it's better to own your plot and not to get a free plot. Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. Okay? And that's why Avram was very makpid. That's why Avram was very makpid to say, I don't want you to give it to me as a gift, Ephron. I want to buy it. Skip to Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Shama Kavru. Remember, he had said that there were three ta'amim. He only mentioned two of them. Here's Tam Shlishi. Dibishvil Shekvar Kavurim, Shama Bosav, Benoach Lameis Lios Kavurim Abosav. Right? Since Avram and Yitzchak had already buried there, and Sarah and Rivka, and Leah, right, it's good for the mace to be buried near his ancestry. B'shama kavarti as Leah. This is the fourth reason. So I think it's referring to just how Leah may have served her husband, owing to the patriarchy and all that from those times, and to be close to his wife. Essentially, that's what he's saying is also something which is a merit to the deceased. Okay, so those are four pinpointed ideas that we learned from Yaakov with regard to Gevura. Okay, so now we get to the other part, which I read in the Pesukim before, with regard to how Yosef reacts most immediately to Yaakov's death. So take a look, we already read the Pasuk, so take a look at Pasuk Aleph. Again, continuing on page 3. Vayipol Yosef apanei aviv. Hanir she Yosef omid berega achron shechai Yaakov samach lo. Right, it looks from this whole thing that when Yaakov dies, Yosef's right there. Yaakov, ayamidaber imo b'chashoy, and Yaakov was talking to him, close. I don't know if chashoy doesn't really mean secret, but v'hainu shekasuv lahalon shamar Yosef l'shvatim ve'elohim pakod yivkod eschem. That what Yaakov was doing was giving Yosef codes about how he's supposed to conduct himself when it's his time. V'yadua shehu simane geula. That Yaakov was telling Yosef what you need to say to those around you when you die, so that they will know how the geula will come. And that's in fact what God says to Moshe at the burning bush. He says, "Pakod pakadati asanim," right? I want you to come and I want you to tell the Bnei Israel that now is the time. And indeed, Moshe does a number of things to follow through with the instruction that was given to Yosef's siblings at the time of his death. Most notably, what happens at the beginning of Parshas B'Shalach, Vayikach Moshe as Asmos Yosef Imo, Ki Hashbeah Hashbiah, as Bnei Yisrael, Moshe takes Yosef's bones because Yosef had Hashbeah Hashbiah. That's fascinating, by the way. What does Hashbeah Hashbiah mean?
Double oath?
It's a double oath, but he had sworn them in. In other words, he didn't even make them. It's not like, okay, guys, I need you to promise me.
He made the swear.
He made the swear for them.
That's right.
Okay, and that's, by the way, it's a brilliant concept. Yaakov did the exact same thing. Right, if you look in the end of Parshas Vayechi, you'll see Vayashba Yosef Esachav Vayashba. Not he swore them in, as opposed to that they swore. It doesn't say Vayishavu. says that Yaakov. So and Yaakov, it says that Yosef swore them in.
How do you swear someone in?
Okay, it's what Yaakov. But remember what Yosef says to Paro. He says the same thing. Avi hishbiani lemor, hishbiani. Not that he made me swear. He basically took the swear upon him. He took the swear upon me by himself. Okay, it's a fascinating way of understanding the grammar. Okay, but the point is, why is that so brilliant that Yaakov did that? Because when Paro says to him, when Yosef is trying to convince Paro, you know, my father, Avi Ishbiani. So Paro could say to Yosef, so what? You can undo your vow. We'll get a Beis Din, right? But no, how can you undo Yaakov's vow? Yaakov's dead. You can't do that.
Take my bone.
Okay, it's already a done deal. And so Yaakov is giving that same kind of instruction to Yosef. Uminayin yada Yosef yoter mehem. So how did Yosef know more than his brothers what the codes for Geula are? Elakach kibel miaviv, mashalo shamu berega acharon. This is what he got from his father, what his brothers did not hear. Sho yeshefa ruach hakodesh imo kenera amavhik lefnei gemaris talkuso. That there was just this divine presence, grace, which was coming on Yosef like an illuminated candle before Yaakov died. And who got it? Who got the message?
Yosef.
Only Yosef. Why? Because Yosef and Yaakov had this very, very special deep connection, which he's going to say again in the very next pasuk, in the very next comment. This crying was not a crying over the fact that Yaakov had just died. Certainly they all died. They all cried bitterly. And even more people, right? All of Egypt cried. And I asked that question before. Is that respect to the dead? When the dead is dead, just, you know, do what you got to do to prepare the body. But to kiss it, it's strange. Right? They had a specially deep connection of the soul. So this crying came out of this special love. And it's this deep connection that was causing Yosef to have this emotional kind of reaction while his father was still alive. It is a goodbye kiss right before his father dies. Okay, what is Vayishakehu? Mashma'o, take a look towards the end of that second to last line. Mashma'o shall Vayishaklo shenashako ze ezeh. Vayishaklo means that one kisses the other, as opposed to Vayishakehu. Remember when Esa Vayishakehu, that's what he does to Yaakov? Does Yaakov kiss him back?
No.
They hug each other back, but not kiss. The fears the Yaakov Esi Pardo, Nashak Yosef, that as Yaakov is dying, he is also kissing Yosef. How could the Netziv say this? It already said that Yaakov died. And the answer is, he brings a proof from Rachel. Mikol Perish, sorry. Mikol Makom Aperish B'Shaskavia. It doesn't mean that he was actually dead. It's in the process of dying. K'mod Dechsib B'Rachel, right? It says, V'yig B'tzeis Navsha Kimesa. Rachel is done. It says Kimesa. What does Mesa mean? She's dead.
Right.
And what does she do when she's dead? She names her son. That's pretty impressive, right? And the answer is, she's clearly not yet dead. Okay? But say snapshaki meisa vatikra shemo hakinami b'shaskaviyah nashako zezeh. At the time of the dying, which could take a few minutes, that's when that took place. Okay. So remember, I mentioned before that Yaakov caused Yosef to be sworn in. What does Yosef do after this? After the embalming takes place and the initial mourning of Egypt, which covers 70 days, as we're told, the end of Pasuk Gimel, by Avru Yimei Chiso, the days of crying passed. By Daber Yosef El Beis Paro Lemor, Yosef speaks to the house of Paro, saying, note that he's not talking to Paro; he's talking to the house of Paro. Why is Mitzrayim crying for so long? There's an interesting theory that when Yaakov came to Egypt, rather, the famine stopped, and when Yaakov died, the signs came that it was starting up again. So Egypt is crying, and we're going to see very soon. The Netziv gave me an answer to a question which was really bothering me this week about what happens when they get to Goren HaAtad. There is an Avel for 7 days, which basically looks like Shiva. And so the big question is, how are they having Shiva when Yaakov has not yet been buried? Right, they're all Onanim. And that idea of him being an Onan, take a look at what the Netziv says. Like the Ber Yosef based power, he calls man Shalonik Baraviv Hareyu Bechlal Onen. Right, he's an Onen. Enu Roy LaHisraos Esamel. So he can't actually talk to the king directly because he's just too involved with, you know, his mind is stuck on taking care of the kavura. Okay, so now take a look at the pesukim, bottom of page 284, and I've dropped a few hints for things which we're going to see very soon in the Nitziv. Vayal Yosef l'kboros aviv, vayalu ito kol avdei paro. So Yosef goes up to bury his father, and kol avdei paro, all paro's servants go up with him. Vayalu ito. Note how it says ito, and not
imo.
Okay? Zikne b'yisrael, v'chol zikne eretz Mitzrayim, and all the elders of Egypt. V'chol beis Yisrael, v'achav v'beis aviv, I'm sorry, v'chol beis Yosef, Yosef's household, and his brothers, and the house of his father. They just left behind their kids and their animals. Okay? Now, in the Nitziv's view, and we've seen, by the way, in different commentaries, different things, so it's just interesting. Which is a closer connection, Ito or Imo, in the Nitziv's view? I believe he's been saying that Imo is a closer connection, and Ito is not as
close. Three times already, I just don't remember.
Okay, I'm pretty sure that's the way he said it. So look what he says here. Vayalu Ito. Okay, so again, who went up Ito with him? Ito. That was Kolav de Paro, Zikne Be. So it's Paro's people, the Zikanim of his house. Whose house? Good question. Okay, maybe Paro's house. And the elders of Egypt. So the Nitziv says, Vayalu Ito l'chvod Yosef olum yatzmam. That they came to honor Yosef. And they came on their own accord. And that's why it mentions them before it mentions Yosef's brothers. The only reason why the Paro elders are coming is because of Yosef. When Moshe goes to Dasan and Aviram, why do the elders follow Moshe to Dasan and Aviram? That he shouldn't go alone. Okay, so that is the first. That's the first idea. Okay, so Ito means that they're not equals, and Imo means that they have a higher and deeper connection. Pasuk Tas. I'm sorry. V'chol Beis Yosef. The Justin Nitziv says is Avadim Shvachos Shalo is his servants. Pasuk Tas. Vayal Imo. Log Sivkan. Vayalu Imo. Ela Vayal Imo. Right. Vayal Imo Gam Rechav Gam Parashim. It's a singular and not plural, and it's also Imo. Hainu she Yosef hela imo, that Yosef brought it up with him. What did he bring up with him? Vehem lo holchu mishum kvod ames, belo lechvod Yosef, ela bitzivu Yosef. They didn't come to honor Yaakov, they didn't come to honor Yosef. They came because, who are they? Kedei leshmor mahalach harabim mikol nezek. They're the security guards. Security detail. So they are imo because they have to literally be with him as close as possible. Or maybe he's concerned about Esav coming, and that's assuming that Esav is still alive, which we've talked in the past about conflicting midrashim. One of which says that Esav came and stopped Yaakov's funeral. Another one which says that Esav actually died at Yitzchak's funeral. We're not going to get into that now. Then the pasuk says Gam Rechev Gam Parashim, that went up with him was also Rechev and also Parashim. So he says, lo kol, it doesn't say all the Rechev and the Parashim, lo kol Rechev, it says b'ziknei Paro, it says regarding all the elders of Paro. The Sham, kol echad alach mipnei hakavod. Right, the Zikanim of Paro all went up out of honor for Yaakov. Aval kanu mishum b'kudas Yosef. So that's the same idea as he said before, that it's Yosef only brought what he needed, last two words, kifitzorecha inyan. Okay? Now we're going to get to the question I mentioned before. The pasuk says, pasuk Yud Aleph, okay? I'm sorry, the end of pasuk Yud, Vayas li aviv evel shivas yamim. Right, there's hesped, gadol v'chaved ma'od, very heavy kind of hesped. Vayar yoshev arz sakhaniya sa evel begorin atav v'yamru evel kaved zel mitzrayim. They say it's a very heavy mourning for Egypt. Okay, krashma avel mitzrayim asher be'evar yardin. Okay, so what do the people from Canaan say? They noted that this is a mourning for Egypt. Okay, now, I don't remember who it was, but we saw in the past that the word kaved is a hint because the famine is described also as being kaved, and the fact that there's a kavedus over here indicates why Egypt might be mourning because of the famine. But take a look at what the Netziv says. So now we're in the comment which is in bold on page 4. Vayomaru evil kaved zel Mitzrayim. His bonu mizeh shaloya tachliza evil mishum yosef echav shema banav. That the mourning which took place in Goren Hatad was not a mourning of Yosef and his brothers. V'lechvodon is ablugam kol Mitzrayim. That it was to honor him, meaning to honor whom? To honor Yaakov. That Egypt was mourning. And it's a mourning, like it was like a mourning for a king. This mourning was for Egypt itself. And therefore, that's what was bothering me. He says that from the time they left the border of Egypt, in the Egyptians' view, it was as if Yaakov was already buried.
Okay?
It was just a matter of semantics. But the, or however you want to describe that, the word. But in their view, he was already, it's like Rabbi Soloveitchik says about Yosef, that when God, not Yosef, about Yitzchak, that when God says to Avram, take Yitzchak to the top of the mountain, it was as if in his mind that Yitzchak was already dead. It was a fait accompli. Going to the top of the mountain was just, you know, taking care of something that was already done.
Once he leaves Mitzrayim, he's dead. He's buried.
No, he's buried.
He's buried.
Okay?
Kimo
b'masaru l'chatefin, like when they put him on the shoulders, ve'ein la'onan esek v'yesh min agavelus. Okay, so for Egypt's sake, Yaakov's already buried. But for the Onanim, right, why? You have the steam. It's like when you go on the plane, when they take the body on the plane now. So everybody was left behind. Right? They have steam as agolel, and they start mourning. Now, what about these people who are accompanying? It doesn't matter. They're Egyptian. Their tradition is over. The job that's going to take place, who goes into Canaan in order to bury Yaakov?
Yosef and brothers.
That's it. So as far as Egypt is concerned, their job with Yaakov is finished. They're just helping out in whatever way their role takes place. And so therefore, so now they can do their avelus at the last moment that they're actually going to see Yaakov before he's brought there. So there was some kind of wake. So Egypt gets to do their shiva for Yaakov. So that they can learn, you are perfectly worthy and allowed and to mourn for Yaakov. Because when Yaakov came, he was, you know, he basically was almost godlike to them in that the river was blessed when he came. And he is like a father figure to the people, and therefore they could mourn for him when it's their last opportunity to do so. But in their eyes, he's already buried. And then when it says by Asuba Navlo, Cain, Kasher Tzivam, his sons did for him the same thing. She Yisu Oso Kemoshia Bidigalim Kumvor Biraba. The Midrash Rabbah talks about how they carry with their flags. Vehuva Perish Rashi Arius, etc. He's just quoting a number of different sources. Betevas Cain, that they did Cain. I'm in the middle of the third line there. Mashma O Kemo Cain Tzedaka L'chaim. That's a pasuk in Mishlei, Dimashma'o, Basis Vayasod, that they did the base and a foundation. Kachaloi bit the Beseder Nisiyaso, Shamar Lem Yaakov, Talmim, Amahu Mitzaveo Sam, Shiasu Kach Makach. It's not really repeating the different reasons for why they had to do what they had to do, that Yaakov said, explained, Avalhema Loasu Kain Machmasatam. They're not doing Yaakov's burial for a reason. They're doing Yaakov's burial because he's there. Father, and because he commanded them. Nothing else really matters. Our father commanded. And here's the Musar Haskel. If the reason why they're burying Yaakov is because Yaakov told them to, he says that's the same thing for mitzvos. You don't need to seek out Tamei HaMitzvos. Mitzvos are given to you Why are they given to you? Because God said so. And a discussion. Skip to the end. The last line. Why do you have to do a mitzvah? Because God said so.
It's like Naseh v'nishma.
Bidiyuk. Exactly. Just do it. Okay, then he gets buried. So actually, look at this. This is interesting. So the brothers, the sons rather, did exactly as commanded. And look what they say. So it gives us two reasons, not two reasons, but two explanations for where they are. One is Me'aras HaMachpelah, which is in Canaan, and that Avram bought. What else did Yaakov tell them? To bury me there because Avram and Yitzchak is there, and right, and Sarah and Rivka. So why doesn't it mention? It gives two out of three. So he says, I'm back in the bold. On top page 5, Kabir Jodapam, Akasav Simoni Mele, gives us a number, you know, the things which Yaakov told them, below Kal Simonim, but not all the things that Yaakov told them. Anishim Dekvura, Hu Kvora Chaim. Okay, this is also a modern important lesson. That burial gives honor, not just to the dead, of course, but Hu Kvora Chaim Gamkein. It's also an honor to the living. Umamele, and therefore, Erech, Magam HaKvura, Gamkein, Kavod Lahem. So whatever the value of the place the Kvura is honor to those who are doing the burial. So the explanation that's being given now is for to honor the living. Aleph, Machmash, Yisadeh, Machpelah, Makayim, Atem, Chubad. It's the field of Machpelah, which is a very honored place. Beis, Machmash, Kanui, Lekach, because it was purchased for this reason. Shnei tamim elu nogea gam l'chavod ha'chaim. That is an honor to the... This is your family burial plot. Oh, it's a chashuv place. That's very nice. But the third reason, that Avram is there, that's for Yaakov's kavod, and so therefore, that doesn't need to be mentioned. Okay, zayin elu nachas ruach lameis. That gives comfort to the dead, but lo shayach l'chavod ha'chaim. It doesn't give honor to those who are living. Okay. Now we get to our final story. Okay, it starts in the last line on page 286. Okay, the brothers have a conversation. They're worried about if Yosef is going to get them back in any way during their lifetime or during Yosef's lifetime. And so they tell Yosef the following. Pasuk Tazayin. Vayitzavua Yosef lemor avicha tziva lefnei Moseh lemor. Interesting that they say avicha, not avinu. Right? Your father instructed before he died. Kol samru Yosef, I want you to tell this to Yosef. Ana sa na pesha chacha v'chatasom ki ra'og malucha. V'ata sa na pesha avdei elhei avicha. Vayev Yosef d'Abram ilav. He said, please kindly forgive the spiteful deed of your brothers and their sin, for they have done you evil. And so now please forgive it. They're saying that since that's what Yaakov said, I want you to forgive us. And Yosef, once again, Yosef's like, Yosef cries. Right. So does he forgive? We're not going to go there. But what Yosef doesn't do is get them back. Okay, that's for sure. What did they do? You know, I mean, we can argue about what they did. Hey, did they sell him? Well, he doesn't sell them. That's for sure. Okay, maybe we could say that he already got them back. Okay, which is an interesting idea. We're not going to look at that now. Take a look at Pasuk Dezayin, the Mitzvah. Okay? So, the first question that he says is, the brothers are telling Yosef about something that Yaakov said. Now, who has been around Yaakov around the time that he dies? I mean, who seems to be spending a lot of time around Yaakov towards the time that he dies? Yosef, for sure. Maybe everybody else too. How would Yosef have missed this? Now, some of the commentaries say the brothers made this up. Okay, this is not true. But the Nitziv has a different perspective, which was fascinating to me, where he says, if you take a look at the second line in Pasuk Tazayin, Venira, after that period, Venira she'eskilu lahavino asher ma shema b'birkas Yosef v'yafozu zra'i adav. He says that Yaakov hinted to this idea in what he told Yosef. She'eshivach oso, she'lo yerachitzim v'keshes la'mizmarim lo, that he's saying, remember when Yaakov says that he says that I didn't really use my bow, and there's a lot of debate as to what Yaakov actually meant when he said that. But he says I didn't get people back to those who were trying to embitter my life. The point is that the Nitziv is extracting from what Yaakov said that the brothers understood this message, and Yosef missed it. Yosef has a deep connection with Yaakov when it comes to matters of ruchnius. But when it comes to matters of catching the hint, remember what he said before about Yosef with Ephraim and Manasseh? He didn't get it. And I'm reading this stuff, and I'm wondering, do the brothers get Yaakov more because they lived with Yaakov so much longer? And Yosef just missed that in his growing and development in those important formative years, in early adulthood, but he just didn't get that. And the brothers get it. Take a look at Pasuk Zion.
He's more with him,
Right, but the Nitziv is saying that Yaakov did say it, but it was in a hint. Take a look at the next Pasuk. Okay? That what do they say? I'm sorry, what the Nitziv says, Pesha Achacha V'chatasam, right? The sin of your brother, the flaw of your brothers in their sin. So what are they? Shtayim ra'u sasu imo. Aleph. I'm in Pasuk Yitzayin. The end of that first line. Afilu lufi ma'achashavtam sheYosef yavir alayim esederach v'royu la'onesh. Right? There is a view that the brothers are right. That Yosef was deserving of something. Something needed to happen. He couldn't continue with those dreams saying that he's going to rule over everybody. Mikom makom loya la'em la'chizazer kolkach. But that did not give them an allowance to be so cruel to him. Shein is the second thing that they did wrong. That they suspected him of wanting that which his dreams were saying. Alright, so he had dreams. Guys, they're just dreams. Leave the kid alone. So those are the two issues. One, that they were cruel. And two, that they were overly suspicious over something which was just a dream. The chatasam, next, I'm reading all of these things now. Chatasam sheshagagu bahilu chasecha. The way in which they went about dealing with Yosef at the time was not good. They did, right? Reuven said, "Al techtu b'yelet." Don't, what's a chait? Usually it's a shogeg. Right? Don't make a mistake here. The bad that they had done to you, meaning that we had done to you. Lo achashad b'atzmo inyan sheyesh lachu shetintor lahem elish mepnei achashad asu lacha ra'a. Right, it's not just that they did something bad. They sold you down the river, yeah? But also because they were suspicious of you. So even if what they did was only an accident, or however you define shogeg, haklal hu adam muad la'olam. A person is always responsible for one deeds. Me'ata afil loya achzarius b'zeh onesh, v'lo haya pesha mikol makom harichatu b'ma shechashdu aso, v'nishu al chashad b'asu lo ra. So what are they saying? They're saying, don't get us back, right? Yaakov is saying, don't get them back. Don't be suspicious of them. That would be a way of getting them back. Not just don't be cruel. Not just don't sell them down the river or up the river.
Don't be suspicious.
Okay, right. Yeah. You know, one of the things, I don't think I gave this to you, but one of the things that the Nitziv notes is that, Yosef had options. He could have killed them, right? That's an easy one. He could have sold them. He says, which one's easier to do, kill or sell?
Kill.
Kill, right? He says, sell's really hard.
Sell's hard.
Okay, anyway, so... okay, so we're up to... Atas sanah lefeshav de Elohei b'icha. Zeh dvar amadar b'atzmam liyosef. He says, this idea of being forgiven, or of forgiving, that's something which speaks to Yosef. Sheh milavad sivu yaviv... what the Nitziv is saying is that we're not for the instruction of the father, okay? We honestly think that they always felt that what they did was justified. Maybe they did it wrong, but getting rid of Yosef at the time was something which was necessary. But he says, Lo saru mikol makom yiras Hashem. Everything that we did was for the sake of heaven. So you have to understand the perspective, what we were dealing with at the time. Maybe we made a mistake, but that's just what it was. And they said that we were coming from a... Now, by the way, the Nazis also said we were just following orders. Okay. All right. Let's look at Vayevk Yosef. I'm just skipping one. Vayevk Yosef. So we've seen a number of times that Yosef is a crier. Okay, who poreish uochem first migmar mepnei chashad. So this is fascinating. What are the brothers essentially doing in telling this to Yosef? Right, Yosef, maybe it was a hint from Yaakov, maybe it wasn't a hint from Yaakov, maybe Yosef caught it, maybe Yosef didn't catch it. But in telling this to Yosef, what are they saying? They're saying, we are suspicious of you. Okay? He says, you know, that sounds like something that we have in Halacha, on Yom Kippur. You know what I'm talking about? Not me, I mean, the Nitziv brings it up. Remember when the Chachamim would go with the Kohen Gadol, and they would tell him on Yom Kippur, hey, make sure you follow the rules. I don't care if you're a tzeduki or a perushi, don't do... You got to do it the Perushi way. Don't do it the Tzeduki way. Okay? Well, yeah. So, but the point is that they're being suspicious. So now, come on a second. The Kohen Gadol knows that they're going to be asking him this. Okay? And, you know, and he's, let's say he's not planning to mess around. So why does he cry? The Mishnah says he's Poreshu Bocher, and he would cry. But he knows. So let's say Yosef knows. Why is he crying? So, what does he say here? Skip to the third line in the middle. He says, look, you might be prepared for the question, but your job, Kohen Gadol, is to cry. Why? Because if you cry over the suspicion, even though it's scripted, if you cry over the suspicion, what does it do? It makes you a more compassionate Kohen Gadol. Because you see what it feels like to be suspected. So, Sha'en Ken Kan, Nival Yosef, and his Bayesh.
It also proves that the brothers never discussed the thing with Yaakov, or else they wouldn't be saying.
Well, it depends. If they. It depends. There are. See, that's the beauty of commentary, okay? Meaning. When Yaakov died, did he know about it or did he not know about it? Did this conversation take place not in Yosef's presence, or did this conversation take place and Yosef missed it? Or did it not take place at all? Did the brothers make it up? So commentaries are split on all this, and that's the beauty of just learning commentaries where you see different perspectives. In the end of the day, do we actually know? The answer is no. We can't actually know. But I just want to conclude this point. Masha'en ken kan nival Yosef and his bayish mizeh hashad. That Yosef is taken by shock. Is the Kohen Gadol taken by shock? He has to find the reason to cry. In Yosef's case, he is taken by shock. You would suspect me of doing something that I would never do, and therefore his response is Lo ya open yeshiva. So next one, who basically that in Pasuk Chapeis when it says Yosef lives who ubeis aviv. What does Hu Beis Aviv mean? He and his father's household. So the Tziv's comment on the bottom page 5 is that he treated them like equals. But wait until you see this. Woo! Top of page 6. Yosef lives. What does the Pasuk say? Yosef says... Sorry, in Pasuk HaBeis, Vayeshev Yosef Mitzrayim, Hu Beis Aviv, Vayechi Yosef, Me'ah Ve'esher Shanim. It says that Yosef lived 110 years, and then it mentions that he had children, and grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, very nice. And then Yosef says in Pasuk HaDalet, Anochi Meis, I'm dead? What does that mean? We've already seen it. I'm in the process of dying, okay? And he tells them the code of how you know that the Gula is coming. Pasuk of Hey, I mentioned earlier, Vayashba Yosef is Bnei Yisrael Emor, Pakod Yivkod Elohim Eschem. He gives them the code. You'll bring up my bones from here. He swore them in. Pasuk of Vav, Vayamas Yosef, Emeyav Eser Shanim. It tells us how old he is when he died. Wait a second. It told us before. So the Nitziv is going to argue that one of these is extra. Which one is extra? The first one or the second one? He's actually going to argue the first one is extra, because usually you mention the person's age at the time of the death. Okay? And they embalmed him, they put him in a box in Egypt. Now, what's going to blow your mind is the Nitziv's comment on the last pasuk, which is really not so mind-blowing until I give you context to understand the question. But before we get to that, I want you to look at what he says on Vechi Yosef Me'av Esther Shanim, top of page 6. We're going to get through this stuff and we're done. So another 3 more minutes. That... giving us of Yosef's age at 110, humiyutar. It's extra. Shari lahalang sivim, come on. It says it the right time. By Yamas Yosef, and maybe I shouldn't. That's when you tell us the age. Elabolam deinim amr chazal, shenis katsu yom shi Yosef, nishis naig barabonus. He says that Yosef, you know something? What did Mel Brooks say? It's good to be the king, right?
Not so good.
It's good. Well, that's the point. He says that somehow Yosef, and this is really rude, he says in this comment, he says that Yosef, I don't want to say couldn't control himself, but on account of the fact that he was the king, like, it's never going to be equal. it's never going to be equal. And so therefore, he argues that mentioning Yosef's age at that point says that Yosef's years were cut short. He should have lived longer, but because he ended up having Eze, Rabbanu, Sushrara Salihem, it's the beginning of the second line, the second to last line there. So that was a cause for Yosef losing some years of his life. That follows with the theme that you have in Chazal, that Yaakov also lost years of his life for different reasons, and Sarah also lost years of her life for different reasons, not because she died at Shaka, the news of the Akedah. There's a lot to be said about that, but anyway. By Ashba Yosef, Basher Hayukamo Mishubadim Lo Lagam Lo Altov Shasa Yimahem. Yosef swore them in because they owed him for all the chesed that he did for them. Al Keno Yemoil Mashesh Biam Bal Korcham. So he swore them in against their will, because it's not just about them. It's Gam Ladoros Ha'acherim. It's you, but your children are bound to it. Mishum Dechol Doros Mechuyav Nagmol Tova LYosef. Everybody owes Yosef everything. Because he was good to their fathers. So we can identify with whatever tribe we're from. If we are not from Yosef, not from Ephraim and Manasseh, we are here because Yosef saved our family. That when he swore them in, he basically said, guys, this is an eternal oath for your family. Okay. I skip to the middle of the second line. What he just says here is that there's a reason for the usage of the name Elohim here, and towards the end of that second line, he says, I told you in Parshas Bereishis that Elohim sometimes is Borei Hateva and sometimes he's Manhig Bedin. That so the question is Yosef swearing them into something which has to do with Ma'aseh Bereishis, or something that has to do with judgment? This is a very long comment of the Netziv, which I cut out, but it was just interesting to hear that Elohim could mean one or the other, and depending on the context, you have to see which meaning it is. Okay, so now, what was that question that I mentioned before? You look at the last pasuk in the Parsha, and it says, "Ayizem ba'aron b'mitzrayim," that Yosef is placed in a box in Egypt. What's the problem with that pasuk?
He's never buried.
It's the end. Okay, hold on a second. So we're going to get to that. It seems pretty anticlimactic. This is the end of Parshas Bereishis, right? He was placed in a box in Egypt. Tell me that there's an eye to the end of the, you know, this is the beginning of the Geula. It's the eye to the end of the Geula, like to be contained. I mean, this should be an important thing. Mm-hmm. And so look what the Netziv says. He says, lo kavru oso. They did not bury him. This is from God. That they should see this box when they leave Egypt. What's the Netziv telling us? That Yosef's kever wasn't a kever. It was like a shrine that they would always see, and they could always look to, and they could point to it, and they could say, that's Yosef. When the time comes, we're going to be taking him out. And we know there's going to be a time coming. Why? Because he promised us. Pakod, Yivkod, Elokim, Eschem. And so what the Netziv is telling us is that this is a not anticlimactic pasuk. It's a huge pasuk. This is the key to the promise that Yosef gives them. Vayisem Baron B'Mitzrayim. Not he's in a river. Not that he's lost. Not that nobody knows where he is. Not that Moshe needs to go hunting. They knew exactly where he was. But they can look to it and say, that's the fulfillment of the promise, that it's going to happen in the future, because we can look at it and we can see and we can know that the promise that was given to Yosef and that Yosef gave to our ancestors or our grandparents is that we're going to be going out one day. And that's what Vayisem Ba'aron B'Mitzrayim is all about. It's the anticlimactic perush.
Excellent.
Okay, folks. Yeah.